It's Wednesday and time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining this week is Roger Whittle, Managing Editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. And Roger, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Carl.
Also with us on the line from Rapid City is Denise Ross, Editor of the Black Hills Knowledge Network and South Dakota Dashboard. And Denise, thanks for joining the program.
Great to be with you, Carl.
A couple hundred people gathered in Pier on Monday to protest Governor Dugard's planned changes at Hilger's Gulch. That's a park on the state capitol grounds. The plans would replace Kentucky bluegrass in the park with native grasses, trees, and shrubs. And Roger, do you know what the idea is behind the governor's plan?
I think there's a few things behind it. The first thing he came out with said that it would cost the, or would save the state a lot of money. Apparently, it costs about, by the numbers they're using, $50,000 a year to keep that grassy area mowed and irrigated and fertilized and everything. And I think it's also kind of a trend in landscaping now to replace these things with a more native look, so some native prairie grasses and wildflowers, and I also think it would beautify the area a little. And I also understand there's some trails around there that they thought that they could extend through this new native prairie area.
Denise, does this seem like a good idea?
Well, I think you could count me as a supporter of the governor's plan as much as I know about it. Now, I don't live in Pier, so those folks have a different vantage point. But I think, you know, Roger's right. This is the trend. You replace some of these water, very thirsty grasses with some more native plants that don't take as much water. Certainly the fiscal conservative crowd has got to like this because it saves the state some money. So it's hard for me to see the downside, but again, I don't live in Pier and I haven't heard the full breadth of the objection to why folks are opposing this change. But it seems from out here in Rapid City like a step in the right direction.
Roger, what have you heard about why some people are opposed to the plans?
They're opposed for several reasons. First, it's been this grassy area that it's wide open spaces where families can go and take their kids and not have to worry about them getting in trouble or anything. And I've also read where they're concerned about if we take it back to a more natural state, it's going to attract more wildlife, and there's people around there complain about skunks that can't open their windows at night because of the smell and more insects coming in, things like that. And I think there's also a group of people that just don't like change. And I saw one resident said if the governor wants to get rid of grass, he can burn off his own lawn. So that was kind of funny.
I wonder what this would mean for the geese, the changes.
Well, I would think the geese would prefer the natural state.
Well,
that's a whole other issue in Pier.
Yeah,
the geese.
Well, moving on from that, a Rapid City Journal story published earlier this month, Seth Tupper reported that information on South Dakota's laws on the state's official website is out of date. Denise, why doesn't the state website have accurate, up-to-date information?
Well, you know, I'm not exactly sure why, and Seth is a friend of mine, and he was talking to me about the story while he was working on it, and the great lengths that he had to go to access a law library, and if you have him on again, maybe he can talk about it too. It took several attempts to actually find the books that had the extra annotations that he was looking at to fully explain the state statutes, what had been repealed, and get the full breadth of the laws. It's great that we can go online and search and find South Dakota codified law. I've used that many times, and it's a great system. I don't think there's any nefarious or bad intent on the fact that these extra pieces of information aren't there. They really are for the legal crowd, the lawyers, the judges, and those types of folks. And so the average person, 9 times out of 10, isn't going to have any use for this extra stuff. But I think now that we're fully into the technology age, everybody looks online for information. It's probably time for the state to look at beefing up what they do have online with the statutes. They've been online for a long time, and it's time to maybe put the full aspect on. And I'm trying to think of a good way to explain to people who aren't familiar with this exactly what it is. It's, for example, if a law has been repealed or altered, you may not see that online, or you won't see that online. As far as I know, you will just see the statute as it exists. And sometimes that full context makes a difference in how a statute is used or interpreted, or you might understand things differently that way. And then there's additional information that lawyers use that I'm probably not qualified to explain to anybody. But what's online now is just the statute as it exists today. It doesn't explain the history. It doesn't explain additional parts of it that are very relevant often, depending on what you're doing.
Well, Roger Whittle, does this seem like a failure in state government, or just something that just needs to be updated and maybe some funding needs to be in place?
Yeah, failure seems to be a little too harsh of a description. From what I read, the people that are saying, well, a lot of people in state government don't have the technical expertise to keep these things current all the time. And yeah, and money is a problem. But, you know, this, I think, goes beyond that. Every year in the legislature, we have government entities wanting to say, wanting to put the minutes to their meetings and the public notices on their website instead of publishing them in the newspapers like the law says they should. And I think this is a prime example of why that approach is not going to work, and we should keep them in newspapers and not on the government websites.
Denise, do you agree with that, we can't always rely on state government agencies to disseminate the information on what they're doing?
Well, I do agree that you shouldn't rely on the government to tell you about itself. I think they do a good job in many cases, but that's why we have a free press in this country, and that's why it takes a reporter like Seth Tupper at the Rapid City Journal to explain some of these deficiencies that I had been completely unaware of. And like I said, I've used that system. I've covered the legislature. I'm pretty familiar with that state website. I think at the very least, they could do this today. They could do this tomorrow. As somebody who works with websites, I can tell you this is a matter of typing in some text, put a note on that would appear on any time anyone looks at a statute that says this is incomplete. If you want to see the full printed version, here's where you can go do it in your community. That I think Seth found his at the county courthouse here in Rapid City, and that those are publicly available, even though it took some doing to get to them. Those are public and therefore the public. So I think at the very least they could do that for now, and then do what it takes to get the full information online. That will take some time, but that's, I think, doable too. I'm sure it's on a computer file somewhere, and you just have to get it loaded onto the website.
Last week, the State High School Activities Association Interim Committee voted 6-5 to draft a bill that would require transgender high school athletes apply for activities based in the sex listed in their birth certificate. The current policy allows transgender athletes enroll in sports based on the gender with which they identify. A similar bill failed in the legislature last year. Roger, do you think this is one of the big debates that's coming in the 2016 session?
Well, I think the debate will certainly be bigger than the issue itself. I don't think this is a situation that affects very many people in high school athletics in South Dakota. I remember when the Activities Association first put out this policy where they were going to base it on the gender they identify with. I'm sure they were trying to do what was best for the sport and for the students, and the members of the legislature heard about it and said, oh, this is something we can politicize. So I'm sure they will take and run with it.
Do you see that happening this session, Denise?
I would imagine that at least one member of the legislature would introduce a bill around this issue, which it really, when you think about it, it is a transgender issue, but it's really more of a fairness question of what's the fairest thing for all the students participating in these sports. And I'm watching cable news a couple of weeks ago, and I think it was out of the state of Virginia or West Virginia. There's a transgender former either Navy SEAL or Marine who's running for Congress, and now a woman, but has bulging biceps, which she appeared on TV in a sleeveless dress. And if you think about that kind of a person participating in like girls volleyball, for example, in South Dakota, or in any number of other sports, that does become a fairness question. I think that's a legitimate discussion to have, and I don't know that there is one right answer for everybody. I think trying to find out what's best for all the students participating, it is the hot topic right now, as we know. We've got a lot of transgender celebrities and other people kind of coming out and being public and doing their thing, and so I think you're going to see that more and more in South Dakota as well.
Well, speaking of Congress, the state's congressional delegation is traveling around the state during recess. Congresswoman Kristi Noem is in the Black Hills. Senator Mike Rounds is in Arlington today for a roundtable discussion with the South Dakota Retailers Association. Earlier this week, Senator John Thune delivered the weekly Republican address from Sioux Falls. Roger, looking at this recess period, how important is that for the delegation to get out and around the state? Is it just campaigning, or does some more substantial work get done?
Oh, I don't think it's just campaigning. I think it does these people good to get out of Washington and come back and actually talk to and meet with the people that they're representing. Representative Noem was in Watertown on Friday, and I had the opportunity to join her at a luncheon for new teachers in town, and she gave the keynote address and talked about her teachers in high school and how important it was for these people to realize the impact that they have in students. It wasn't political at all. It was a wonderful speech. And, I think, when they're in South Dakota, they can't do very much damage, so we should keep them here as much as possible.
Denise, important that the delegation gets to South Dakota during this recess and travels around the state?
It really is one of the most important constituent times in the calendar for Congress, and I'll take this opportunity to speak to a bigger issue. One of my pet peeves is what I think is a very hollow criticism of members of Congress and Congress itself when they say they don't work because they're only in session 3 or 4 days a week or whatnot, and then they go home. Well, going home, and as anybody who's covered these people or any reporter knows, going home means going home and meeting with your constituents, having meetings, having town hall meetings, having meetings with different interest groups. And those folks are busy when they're back in South Dakota or any state they go to, I'm sure. And so when anyone hears people criticizing Congress for going home, I think that's part of their job. If they go home and don't go anywhere and don't talk to anybody, that's a problem. But I've not ever seen that happen. I've only seen them rushing from one event to another, one community to another, trying to cover as much territory as they can while they are here and talk to as many people as they can. And it's part and parcel of being an office holder, no matter where you are. When you're talking to people and addressing their concerns, that's part of campaigning, and you can't separate those two. That you're going to either make somebody mad or make them happy when you try and fix their issue or speak to them about an issue. And that's just the way our system works.
And Roger, you mentioned seeing Kristi Noem last week. That one-on-one that office holders have with not only people like yourselves, those of us who are in the media, but also, most importantly, of course, the citizens, the people who live in South Dakota. This seems so vital that if they didn't come here, we'd miss that?
Oh, I think so, and I agree. I think one could make the argument that this is even more important that they spend time with their constituents here in South Dakota than spend their time at the Capitol. I mean, this is where they learn what the people they represent are thinking about.
Well, when Congress returns to Washington, they're set to tackle the Iran nuclear deal. Senator Rounds is among Republicans who's against it. Senator Thune is critical of the deal as well, and he said it's the number one issue concerning him for the upcoming year. Denise, with Senator Thune's rank in the Senate, what role do you think he could play in GOP efforts to sink the deal?
Well, he's designated somehow as a spokesman for the Republicans in the Senate, and he's no stranger to some of those cable news shows. So I expect he will be one of the main faces you'll see out there talking about this deal and what they're doing and why they're doing it to try and sink it. My sense is it's not going to take very long for the Republicans to try and kill the deal and Obama to veto their bill and the veto to be sustained, which is what the conventional wisdom is the path going to happen when Congress gets back into session. So it may not be a very long-lived situation, but it's certainly going to be intense, and I think it'll be you won't be able to get away from it for at least a couple of weeks while that's all going on.
And Roger, what role do you see that Senator Thune could play in this debate?
Well, he's certainly a member of the Republican Party leadership, and I think he has the respect of a lot of people. And he plays a good game. I think he could play a big role in this.
Last week, veteran journalist Kevin Wooster suggested that former Democratic lawmaker Frank Klocek would be a good candidate to run against John Thune in 2016, but Klocek said he isn't interested. And now in his KLO blog, Kevin says that friends of Rapid City writer and filmmaker Sam Hurst are encouraging him to run for the Senate. And since we're talking about someone from that side of the state, Denise, what can you tell us about Sam Hurst?
Well, Sam is no shrinking violet. He is what you might call a firebrand. He's liberal, for sure. He had a column in the Rapid City Journal for many years, and it was kind of a must-read, love him or hate him kind of a piece that people definitely commented on and got the water cooler discussions going in town. I don't know how good of a political candidate he would be. He does not fit the typical mold of people, but then again, we're looking at Donald Trump, who doesn't fit the typical mold either, and look at how well he's doing. If Sam Hurst or somebody like him ran, it would be a very interesting dynamic between he and Thune, who's very smooth and polished, and Sam is very smart, has lots of facts and figures at his fingertips, but would not pull any punches, I don't think. I think he would be very, he would be a very, very critical of Thune in many ways and other members of that party, I think.
Roger, do you think it's good for the Democrats to have a candidate, no matter who it is, if only just to have someone who can debate Senator Thune?
Oh, it sure is. I mean, the last time Thune got a free ticket, and for that to happen to the, you know, one of the major political seats in the state 2 years in a row, or two sessions in a row, would not be good. The Democrats would be wise to choose somebody. If nothing else, just to make the senator spend some of his campaign cash that he has.
With these names that are cropping up, you know, Kevin Wooster mentioned Frank Klocek last week, and on Dakota Midday he mentioned a TV weatherman as a possible Democratic candidate, now mentioning Sam Hurst. Are we at a point where that it seems like they're looking for anyone, or that political junkies are just throwing out names as a thing of seeing if someone will...
Kevin likes to stir the pot a little bit. I think you have to remember that, too. I think he knows what will generate a lot of comments on his blog. I think some of these personalities have been around for a long time and are well-known, and people have strong opinions one way or the other about some of these folks. But I do think the Democratic Party has to run somebody against Thune. When they don't run people against him, he just he only gets stronger. He doesn't have to answer questions. And I think that's a vital part of our role. Even if you think you're a long shot to win the race, I think it's still really important to challenge him and challenge him in a vigorous way, even so that the voters can hear the debate and decide who they agree with and what they think about those things that they maybe hadn't thought of until.
Maybe you should have Kevin Wooster run.
Yes, well. All
Let's
right.
Start a draft Kevin website.
Draft Kevin. Well, Denise and Roger, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us on the Dakota Political Junkies this week.
Thanks, Carl.
Thank you.
Denise Ross is editor for the Black Hills Knowledge Network and South Dakota Dashboard. Roger Whittle is managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. And the Dakota Political Junkies are a regular Wednesday feature of Dakota Midday.